Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on the seventh floor of the Tribune Tower, live on 720 WGN. And we're here till 5 a.m., and it's a Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs, Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. In honor of Jason Statham's birthday yesterday, we're going to talk about some unusual facts about him. And also in honor of Atomic Blonde opening tomorrow, we are going to talk about great female action stars and the best action stars of all time. So we're going to have some action, talk about some action movies and action stars a little bit later on. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And right now, though, it's time for our biweekly visit with a TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter, our good friend Dan Feinberg. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And always a lot of TV to talk about, and we welcome Dan to the show. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Nick.
How are you?
I am okay with much TV to watch and talk about.
Absolutely. And now we have to say, and we have to tell everybody where you are and what's going on.
Yes, I am in Beverly Hills at the Beverly Hilton, and we are 2 days into the Summer Television Critics Association press tour, which we talk about every 6 months, and it's the time that many or most of your favorite television critics gather together in a hotel ballroom for somewhere between 14 and 20 days, and basically one after another, press conference after press conference, networks, cable broadcasts, streaming, etc., present all of the shows that are coming out in the next 5 or 6 months. And we get to ask impertinent and intelligent questions, and we get sort of a feeling of what the next few months of TV are going to look like.
All right. Well, so far you've been there, you said 2 days you're in?
2 days. We arrived on Monday evening, and there was just an evening event that night for National Geographic. And then we've had 2 full days of nonstop cable panels for a bunch of different cable networks.
Well, what are some of the highlights that you can share with us?
Let's see. Well, I mean, this afternoon was one of the cable biggies, and we had HBO for a solid 3 hours this afternoon.
Wow.
HBO, yeah, it's one after another. It's 6 panels nonstop, including, let's see, what do we get panels for? HBO has an upcoming documentary about Steven Spielberg from Susan Lacy, who was one of the creative steerers of American Masters over on PBS, mm-hmm. their first HBO project.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Dan. Did they have a panel for the Deuce?
They did indeed.
Oh.
I was going to get there, but I can.
Okay,
right
I'm sorry. No, no, no. Go in order. I just get so excited when the name David Simon is in my head. I just get very excited. But go ahead. You were talking about the documentary about Spielberg,
which is really good. It plays basically as an American Masters about Steven Spielberg. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. She talked to basically all of the stars of all of his movies. It's a rather astounding assortment of A-list talents who are there, pretty much anyone who's anyone. And sometimes, you know, someone even like Tom Cruise, pretty big deal. He's got one talking head and out. So there are a lot of people that have to be covered. And, you know, all of those 70s filmmakers talk about their early memories of Spielberg. So you got De Palma, you got Scorsese, you got Coppola, you got all those guys. And it's a pretty good film. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is pretty long, but it's good and interesting. And then I'm just really going to skip to it because we also had a panel for The Deuce, which people may or may not know is David Simon's upcoming new show. He co-created it with novelist George Pelicanos, who's worked on his last couple shows as well. And it's a early 70s, at least so far, drama about sort of the gritty, dirty streets of New York City and Times Square. And, you know, back when there were packs of prostitutes on every corner and packs of pimps across the street watching them. And the adult cinema industry was just burgeoning. And it stars James Franco in a double role as brothers Vince and Frankie, and I've seen 4 episodes so far, and it is very, very promising.
Oh, man, I can't wait. You know, James Franco needs to work more.
He does. We'll see in this case. He's playing not one but 2 roles. Jeez. He's also executive producing the show, and he directed at least 1 episode.
Oh, my God. So. Wow. Wow. Okay.
So he is very busy.
Yeah.
And it also features Maggie Gyllenhaal, who's a producer on the show, and it's really terrific here. The pilot was directed by Michelle McLaren, and it really has a very, very good sense or feeling for, you know, pre-Giuliani, dirty, nasty, gritty, high-character New York City. And the reproduction of the period is actually very impressive, and it's a combination of things. It's, you know, obviously production design, costume, all of that, but there's a lot of sort of quiet CG in it. A lot of things that very clearly pass through someone's computer, and best case scenario, you don't have any awareness of that at all because it's just, you know, reproducing a historical moment and does it very well.
Yeah. Yeah. So no Lion King marquees anywhere to be found.
Indeed. All the marquees are for early 70s. You know, there were a lot of good movies that were showing back then. So there are a lot of sort of art movies and a lot of early porn. And, you know, they said on the panel that they want you to basically be able to smell the nastiness of those unclean streets. And you really kind of can.
That's awesome.
It's a very good evocation.
Yeah, that's great. I'm so excited for that. And that's like September. It debuts in September, right?
September, October, yeah. It is premiering this fall, and lots of potential. Wish I'd had more time to watch. They sent out, I believe, all 8 of the first season episodes and just did not have time to get to them all because too much dinner.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
What else do we have? Well, we had Larry David drop by to talk about the upcoming season of Curb and to show a few clips, which all look basically like Curb. And Larry David showed up and basically deflected questions and made fun of reporters for 30 minutes, which is what he does.
Right. That's
great. It was very amusing. Everyone enjoyed having their questions made fun of by Larry David. He has done this fairly regularly. It is a thing he does, and he was very amusing at it. So that was this afternoon's big thing, courtesy
and
of HBO.
I was looking that you wrote on Hollywood Reporter about Day One, which featured Morgan Freeman. What was Morgan Freeman doing there?
Morgan Freeman has done these Nat Geo series. He did The Story of God, where he sort of went around the world talking basically theology with people of different religions. And now he has The Story of Us, which is a sort of bigger picture, looking at people with different perspectives. And it's this, you know, it's a thing that he has apparently found interesting in recent years, just going around talking to different people. And Morgan Freeman is often a taciturn gentleman if he doesn't want to be there and playing around. But he was in pretty high spirits yesterday, relatively speaking, and he was good. Yesterday was also, again, a busy day. We saw we had a panel for Epix's new series version of Get Shorty, which isn't exactly the Elmore Leonard novel and isn't really a remake of the movie, so it's kind of they want you to view it as being kind of Fargo-esque in its tangential relationship to both things.
Yeah.
I don't know if it necessarily exactly works, but it does feature Ray Romano, who is very good. Ray Romano can be in just about anything, I would say.
Yeah. And it's I just love the way his career has gone now after the sitcom. You know, starting with Men of a Certain Age and now, you know, going through what he's doing now, and he's so great in The Big Sick. And I thought he was one of the best things on Vinyl. And I just think his career now is just so interesting and great.
Oh, he's gotten to this point where he, you know, at this point doesn't really need to be a comedic actor at all. He barely needs to be funny in things. He can sort of periodically remind you how funny he is, but he's just a good dramatic character actor. And so he's playing the studio producer who gets involved with the mobster trying to produce a script, and the mobster is played here by Chris O'Dowd, and there's some amusement to it. I'm not quite sure that it captures the spirit of either the book or the movie exactly. It's not as instantly involved in this world as Noah Hawley's Fargo was pretty much right from the beginning. It feels like it's trying to be too imitative without necessarily succeeding wholly, but it has elements that are interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a trailer for it, and I thought it looked pretty interesting, and you know, like some of the cast members are really great, as you mentioned. So,
and let's see, what else did we have yesterday? We had a little visit from Abby and Alana.
Oh, yes,
about the upcoming yes. who I know that you enjoy.
I do, very much.
Talking about the upcoming season of Broad City, which I've seen the first two episodes of. It returns on September 13th.
I saw a quick clip of them at Comic-Con. And at their panel at Comic-Con, and they were talking about a particular episode where they took mushrooms, Abby said that you should wear diapers because you might pee yourself laughing. Did you happen to see? Was that one of the episodes that you saw?
It was not one of the episodes we saw, though. I think we saw clips from it. I am assuming that is probably the episode that generated the partially animated sequence
that would probably
that we saw.
Yes, yes.
It seems likely, and those did indeed look wacky. And the episodes that we saw what I think is the premiere, which is kind of a sliding doors origin story for their friendship.
Okay,
which is very amusing, and you know the show is just back, and it's interesting how they're handling. The start of the Donald Trump presidency, which is kind of one of the standard questions that we're going to ask everyone over the next,
days. We have to take a break here at the end, and we'll come back and talk more. But I wanted to mention the one thing that I did read about that they are doing on Broad City is they're actually beeping every time someone says Trump. They're beeping it like it's a swear word.
That they are.
Yes, I think that's great. Okay, hang on, Dan. All right.
Sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us. He writes about TV for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We talk TV every couple of weeks, and we're going to continue to do that after we take this break for the news on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Yeah. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's me, Nick DiGilio. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell after me at 5. And at 6, it's Steve Cochran with your morning drive. Triple Play Thursday is in effect, so get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about great action stars, your favorite action stars, both female and male, and much more coming up right here on WGN. Right now, we're talking with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He is talking to us from the historic Beverly Hilton after the first few days of the TCA press tour. And we've been talking a little bit about the highlights of that. Dan, anything else you wanted to mention about the last couple of days?
Let's see. We've had a bunch of stuff from AT&T Audience Network, which some people who have DirecTV will know as formerly the 101 Network. And they have probably their most interesting show yet coming up in Mr. Mercedes, a Stephen King adaptation with Brendan Gleeson, Mary Louise Parker, and Harry Treadaway from Penny Dreadful. And
that's a great cast.
It really is, and it was created or adapted from the Stephen King book by David E. Kelly, so wow. You know, don't get much better than that, and directed by Lost veteran Jack Bender, and it's got a lot of potential. It's kind of a game of cat and mouse between a psychotic killer and a former police detective, gone to see police detective, and Brendan Gleeson plays said police detective, and in what is a brilliant stroke that we don't see enough, they let him be Irish. And the fact that they did not force Brendan Gleeson to do an American accent and that he is just swearing and drinking in Irish is so welcome and such a relief for those of us who hate seeing British, Irish, Australian actors of character becoming boring Americans in TV things.
Yeah, yeah.
Just Brendan Gleeson being Brendan Gleeson.
That's awesome.
It's a tremendous relief.
That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah, I could watch him all day. Now, what are you looking forward to over the next days?
Oh, there is genuinely so much stuff. There's, of course, all the network stuff. And if you've been following my Take Me to the Pilot series, you know that really nothing's been particularly good. And so that's probably going to get in the way of some of the excitement. But there's just a lot of, you know, we've got an afternoon with Hulu tomorrow, and Hulu will probably get to take a little bit of a victory lap to celebrate Handmaid's Tale. I don't think we're doing anything related to Handmaid's Tale on the panel, but, you know, they're more relevant now than they were last time they visited, and that'll be fun. They also have a couple interesting shows. They have a Marvel show co-created by Josh Schwartz, Runaways, which looks interesting. They've got a show that's executive produced and directed by Seth Rogen. That ought to be interesting. They've got a talk show with Sarah Silverman that they're paneling that I don't believe has actually been produced, but I assume she'll say funny things about it. And yeah, just the events just keep going right down to a Viceland show with James Vanderbeek playing Diplo. There's a lot of weird stuff on TV.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, you mentioned Take Me to the Pilots. Let's talk a little bit about some of the pilots that you've seen. Let's talk a little bit about SEAL Team on CBS. Tell everybody about that one.
SEAL Team is CBS's entry in this fall's network. Think that people in the age of Trump want rah-rah militaristic shows about supporting our military, which either will or will not be correct. I don't have an answer to that. I think we're either going to discover that really audiences don't want it, and in that case, we won't see any of it again, or else they're making a correct bet, and we're going to see a lot more of it after that, mm-hmm. depending on how long Trump lasts. So, but yes, this one stars David Boreanaz, who has now been between Buffy and then Angel and Bones, has been a regular on people's TV sets nonstop since 1997. So that's a lot of David Boreanaz.
20 years of David Boreanaz.
That is how we should rename our era. These past 20 years should just be known as the 20 years of David Boreanaz. It's his world. We're just watching him on TV an hour a week.
Right.
And, you know, it happens that I generally tend to like David Boreanaz just fine.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
He's great as Angel, especially when he didn't have to be Irish. And, you know, always a fine lead on Bones. And he's perfectly sturdy and serviceable as the lead of basically SEAL Team 6, a Special Forces unit. And... yeah, it's pretty much that. There's nothing all that exciting about it, except the random people that it has in it. So it features Jessica Paré from Mad Men playing an intelligence analyst, and you're like, okay, sure, Megan Draper, come be an intelligence analyst and give your advice to Celie Booth and Angel or whoever. And it's got Max Thirrio from Bates Motel, who in another one of the sort of trends of these fall military shows, it's a lot of actors who maybe people haven't taken seriously, but with beards so that you take them seriously. And so he's doing it. Jay Harrington and CBS SWAT is doing it. Basically, having a beard is a good way to be taken seriously in an action show. Mm. So yeah, it's not awful. It goes a lot for sentimentality. It's a lot like History's Six, which had the advantage of Walton Goggins, who makes anything watchable. Yeah. This doesn't really have that, but I think it's probably very on brand for CBS, and I would not be at all surprised if it succeeded, regardless of what happens with NBC's The Brave and the CW's Valor,
okay.
The other big network military shows.
All right. So we need to talk about Dylan McDermott's mustache.
We do, but the problem with talking about Dylan McDermott's mustache, which is the star of L.A. to Vegas on Fox, is that it's not going to be unleashed onto the American people, Dylan McDermott's mustache, until mid-season at some point. Maybe it'll sneak on in November or something, but Fox has just been very slow in posting actual shows that are coming soon, and so I decided to do a Take Me to the Pilots because... unlike just about everything else I've watched for network this fall or even into spring, I actually really like it.
Oh.
And so I decided to write an enthusiastic Take Me to the Pilots because otherwise everything else has been kind of gloomy. But L.A. to Vegas is just genuinely funny. It's about the people who work on a sort of really crappy budget airline that flies Friday and Sunday trips to and from Las Vegas. And so it's a collection of degenerate gamblers and conventioneers and, you know, young couples in love going to get married and the kind of battle-hardened crew of the airline featuring Dylan McDermott's mustache as the pilot of the plane.
Yeah.
And it's just funny. It's just sharp. The punchlines work. Dylan McDermott's mustache is great. You've got Peter Stormare, crazy, crazy accents as if no one's ever seen that before.
Yeah.
But doing it in a funny way, you know, it's always hit and miss with him. Sometimes you're like, oh, it's just him doing his funny accent, crazy man shtick. And sometimes you're like, yay, it's him doing his crazy accent, funny man shtick. This one is much more in the latter category. Mm. He's really funny. And it's just good. And there's no other comedy for the fall that I've laughed at. And so I laughed a bunch of times at this. And naturally, that means that it won't be around for months.
Right. So is Fox being slow because they've got the World Series again? Is that because are they going to wait till after the World Series?
No, I think they don't have that many fall shows. And so that's part of it. They have their Marvel show, The Gifted, and with Marvel, you just never know if they're being randomly persnickety with giving critics, you know, something early before the special effects are exactly perfect or something. And I assume it'll probably pop up into our inboxes the day before Fox presents a press tour.
Yeah.
And then we'll have to go, delay everything else. I have to watch this pilot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're delaying a little bit on that, and then they also just don't have that many new things coming. I feel as if there's a lot of flux happening with Fox's schedule, and so maybe they're holding LA to Vegas for the right time because they actually have faith and confidence in it, or maybe they don't know what to do with it. One or the other.
Okay. Andy, I was just looking at another one of your Take Me to the Pilots. The CW is rebooting Dynasty. It doesn't end, does it, Dan? I mean, how many reboots and remakes and all that stuff are we going to see this season?
Oh, ever so much. Ever so much, ever so many. I have yet to write my Take Me to the Pilots for CBS's SWAT, but it's another one. There are lots of them. This one is a straight-up remake. It's not a reboot. It's got no direct ties to the original, as to whether they start slipping in guest stars to goose ratings at a certain point or not. I think one can assume that they will. It's just Dynasty. And it happens that Dynasty is not one of those 80s shows that had any meaning to me at all. So I can only approach it as what it is. And to the best of my ability to watch this, my feeling is that I thought it was supposed to be trashier. I thought it was supposed to be more extreme and more fun, and this is not so much that. Nothing in it is shocking. And I don't know if it's possible for a show like Dynasty to actually be effectively shocking anymore, except that if you look at Empire when it premiered, Empire is nothing if not kind of the African-American version of Dynasty. And I believe that was how Lee Daniels always pitched it. And so that proved that you could do something like this with the right attitude. And I'm not sure that this has it, but I'm also not sure that I would recognize it if I saw it.
Yeah.
It's just not, you know, it's just not a franchise that meant something to young Dan.
So no cat fights and shoulder pads then yet.
Cat fights, yes. Shoulder pads, no.
Okay.
But there, don't worry. There is definitely cat fighting in the first episode. No one gets tossed into a swimming pool. Spoiler
right.
alert. They're the kind of things that I know are typical of Dynasty, and I know they exist. And some of them are kind of hinted at here, but no shoulder pads. I we'll see if they find a way to work shoulder pads into the second episode.
My mom will be disappointed that there are no shoulder pads. She was a huge fan of Dynasty.
I suspect there are going to be a lot of huge fans of Dynasty who are going to be disappointed by what this is not.
You know, it's interesting because I enjoyed the reboot of Dallas. And, it wasn't a big – I never really watched Dallas in the 80s, but I thought the reboot of Dallas was fun.
I didn't hate it. Dallas also, you know, there were a lot of actually soap operas that I was just too young for in the 80s. And then finally, you know, 90210 kicked in at exactly the right time
for me
to be right there for it.
Sure.
And so when they remade that one I took personally.
Right.
But Dallas, a little bit less so, and Dynasty, even less than Dallas.
Okay. Dan, hang on.
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. We always have a fun time talking with Dan about TV. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and he is talking to us live from the Beverly Hilton, where he is at the TCA press tour. And we'll talk more about that and TV right after we take a break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5. It's Triple Play Thursday, so get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. And we're going to be talking about action stars, both female and male, coming up in a little bit. So Dan Feinberg joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're talking TV, as we do every couple of weeks. Okay. Welcome back, Dan.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about, you contribute to the IndieWire sometimes, and the best family friendly TV show was the topic, and tell us how you handled that.
Cheating, the usual.
Yeah.
If you follow the weekly IndieWire critics poll, the frequency with which I give a single one answer to any question is close to never, and this was one as well. Because I started off by saying that as long as The Simpsons is on the air, it's always the answer to most questions. Because as I like to do in this poll, the answer to most questions is either The Simpsons or Method and Red. And Method and Red, as much as I love it, you know, actually, it's totally family friendly. Who am I kidding? Method and Red is a show for all ages. And if you haven't gone to YouTube and sought out episodes of Method and Red, you totally should.
Mm-hmm.
That way I can disappoint you. Disappoint everyone. But no, it's the close to real answers I gave were ABC's Speechless and Netflix's One Day at a Time. And just on the principle that these are shows that are family friendly because they show what families are actually like. And in 2017, they show different ways that families exist, different ways that families are still loving, even if they have different forms of adversity, even if people in the family are going through different personal dramas, how they can come together at the end of each episode and still be a family and love each other, even if they fought for 20 minutes. And those are two really great shows that more people should be watching in both cases, even though a fair number of people are probably watching both shows anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's get to I have it on my DVR, and I keep putting it off because I've heard nothing but bad things about it. But I was really, really looking forward to Midnight Texas. And it's just been kind of sitting on my DVR because I'm dreading watching it from everything that I've heard. And I know that you didn't like it either. Tell everybody about Midnight Texas.
First, we need to talk about why you were really looking forward to Midnight Texas, I think.
Because I really like True Blood. And
how much of True Blood did you honestly really like? I need a perspective on that. Did you like True Blood at first and then you stuck with it out of faith? Did you like True Blood all the way to the bitter end?
No, I liked the first sentence that you said is I loved True Blood when it first came on. I stayed with it and then I found myself liking it again later.
It kind of had a little bit of renewed energy in the last season,
right.
I feel like. But True Blood is a show where I didn't like it its first season. I thought suddenly in its second season it got really good, and then it got really bad again for a lot of time. So it's all sort of relative as to whether what you're looking for in a TV show is a really cheap-looking, kind of middling cast, second-tier broadcast network version of True Blood, in which they can't really do anything with sex, and they can't really do anything with violence, and they can't really do anything with language, and they don't really have any interest in making the supernatural into subtext for anything. And so it's just kind of a bunch of sort of a Mad Libs version of supernatural things in a small Texas town.
Yeah.
And that, unfortunately, is what Midnight Texas is, though it also is based on a Charlaine Harris series of novels. So at least it comes by its similarities to True Blood. Honestly, it's just not nearly enough fun, and there's nothing under the surface. It baffled me when you can do a story in 2017 about outsiders and about oddballs and people who don't fit in contemporary society, and you just can't find a way to make any of it into subtext for anything. You just can't find a thing to say beyond, oh, here's a town and there's a fortune teller, and there's a witch, and there's a vampire, and there's a guy who turns into something scary when the moon is full, and that's just what they are and what they're doing. And it's not all that funny, you know, and there has to be some humor in something like this. True Blood was generally a pretty funny show.
Yeah.
And the cast is just kind of middle brow. There are people in it who are good. Peter Venza, who plays the vampire Lemuel, has a lot of charisma, and so he's watchable. Sarah Ramos, who plays one of the mortals in town, you know, she was so likable and so just believable on Parenthood, and you know, this is a decent part for her, and so she's fine. But there's a lot of flatness and blandness to the cast, unfortunately, and it's just like a lot of other shows that exist.
When I looked at the commercials for it, I mean, I was looking forward to it because, you know, first of all, I love, you know, horror stuff. Anything horror related, I'm immediately going to jump on it for some reason. But it looked to me like it looked like they just tweaked Grimm a little bit.
It's a lot like Grimm. I would say probably there are definitely similarities to Grimm, and it's sort of pan-supernatural, let's bring it all together and you know, prevent an apocalypse kind of, you know, general, predictable arcing. Lots of people, I've been told, really liked Grimm as it went along. I checked out.
Me too.
Fairly early in
yeah,
that.
Yeah, me too.
It did have fans, though, and NBC kept bringing it back. And, you know, it's an example of a show that just lived its life on Friday, which is kind of remarkable in this day and age. Yeah. So it's a lot like Grimm. It's a lot like Preacher, only without any real craziness and without the things that they get away with on Preacher. And yeah. Preacher's also been pretty good this season.
It's been great. I love Preacher. I think it's great.
I thought the last couple episodes have been maybe a little less good. You know, since the episode that took place largely in hell and
right.
kind of gave us the Hitler backstory, which I thought was kind of trippy and ambitious. The past couple episodes I haven't loved as much,
yeah.
but it's still been much better this season.
Yeah.
So it's like that. American Gods, it's just like a bunch of other shows that are much, much better. And so, you know, as I say so often, you know, back in the day when there were fewer shows and, you know, you could get away with having a summer show that was just a summer beach read guilty pleasure with nothing really meaty on it. And I just don't think in 2017 you can get away with something that has so few ambitions.
Yeah. Okay. Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us, and we'd love to talk TV with him. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. And again, you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We'll take a break. We got the news coming up and then more TV talk right after that. How you doing, everybody? Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran with your morning drive at 6. Triple Play Thursday is coming up. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're also going to talk about action movie stars, the best, most memorable, and some of the greatest female action stars in honor of Atomic Blonde, which opens tomorrow. But right now we're talking TV. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, is with us. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's get back to talking TV. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, Twin Peaks. it continues, and although, you know, I still think the highlight of the season was Episode 8, without question, one of the most insane things I've ever seen on television. It was horrifying and beautiful and amazing. I still think that this thing is just, I'm really loving watching this show. Every Monday morning when I get home from work, it's just a treat to watch. And this past episode, you know, It started to cross over into bringing that insanity of Episode 8 into this world, and I really love the fact that, like, most of it doesn't take place in Twin Peaks. I just think that for some reason I find that very amusing. But you know, when Matthew Lillard's head exploded and it took David Lynch a couple of minutes to say he's dead, that was the loudest I've laughed in a very, very long time. And I think everybody's doing phenomenal work on it. And I also think the episode before, the week before, Dan, might have been the only joyful and relatively healthy sex scene that David Lynch has ever filmed in his entire career.
Relatively.
Yeah, relatively. But it just wasn't really dark and twisted and sick. It was just like, look, oh, there's some joy happening here in this sex scene. It's weird.
It is a sex scene in which the two people were both getting pleasure out of it, neither one engaging in anything fairly kinky. I completely agree that that is the case.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, how are you
as to whether 50% of the parties in that case were truly capable of being consenting parties, I think that probably depends on what you're feeling about Dougie's IQ these days.
Well, I love the show, man. The episode, and it was the week before, was the episode where the girl who plays Candy, I don't think I've ever seen her before. She's one of the Vegas girls, and she ends up smacking Robert Knepper in the face trying with a phone after trying to swat a fly. I think she's absolutely hilarious, and I'm not familiar. Do you know who she is?
No, I didn't know either. I didn't know her character name before that episode, in which she had both the very, very, very extended confrontation with the fly, and then the extreme reaction and blowback to whacking Bob Knepper in the face. Was it a phone or a remote control?
Oh, remote control. Yeah, it was a remote control. Sorry. Yeah.
In any case, it was a very extreme way of handling a fly. And yes, that whole dance she did in the direction of the fly, culminating in the remote control scene, was wonderful. And it's one of those things where, again, like the whole thing with this show is that it is so utterly unspoilable. I've fallen into the watching Game of Thrones live on Sunday and waiting on Twin Peaks, because I know that people tell me, if people were to say Daenerys's head blew up, and for the record, that did not happen. I did not spoil anything bad about Game of Thrones people.
Right.
But if someone did, it would legitimately spoil that scene for you. Whereas there's nothing anyone could say about Twin Peaks that would spoil the weirdness.
No, absolutely not. It's David Lynch. On some insane level, it's all starting to fall together now. All of this stuff that we've been watching for 11 episodes now, where after every episode, I have more questions than any answers. And I don't have a problem with that at all, because I just think it's brilliant and so mesmerizing and like nothing on television. It's just a joy to watch every week. But it all, in some weird, insane David Lynch way, it's starting to fall together and make sense. And
I wonder if I'm as convinced on the second part as you are. Definitely, without any question, it is unique. It is weird and enjoyable and hypnotic and strange and sometimes scary and disgusting. The sick child in the traffic jam and the screaming mother.
Oh my God!
That hurts my head. It's so disturbing in a way that is so different from what other shows on TV try to call disturbing.
Yeah.
Like that's the scene where you actually watch it and you go, I'm having a visceral physical reaction.
Absolutely.
This is messing with me.
No question about it.
Most shows don't do that.
Yeah. No question about it. Yeah. I don't know.
On the other hand, things are coming together in a, oh, look, the pieces are coming together. I think it's just an, oh, look, it's another episode of Twin Peaks. Let the weirdness begin. But, if things are coming together, excellent. But I don't necessarily need them to.
Okay. Yeah, well, I don't either. I just find it a little more gratifying that in some weird way it's starting to make a little more sense to me. Maybe I'm just insane. I don't know. I don't know. All I know
It's wavelength. You might be on the right wavelength.
Yeah. It's just so crazy. All right. I watched a couple of a few episodes of a couple of Netflix shows that I want to throw at you. The first being Friends from College. And I remember you talked a little bit about it the last time you were on with it. I watched the first three episodes and I don't know if I'm going to go back. I just find the character so aggressively unlikable. And it's not that I don't like comedies about a-holes, because, Sonny is one of my favorite shows and Seinfeld is one of my favorite shows of all time. So I'm not adverse to that. I just the behavior of these characters, I just found I just couldn't get past it the first three episodes. And despite the fact that the cast is insane and the cast is great.
It is such a great cast. And as to whether the show is entirely in on the joke of not having any jokes and of being unlikable, I still don't know the answer. I've seen a lot of people, or even a few people, let's not go with a lot of people. I've seen sort of a, a limited backlash against the critical reaction, which was largely negative. And you know, some people are going to like everything. There's no question that that's part of the Netflix model, is that some people are going to be interested and amused, and things are going to work for some people. Everything will have an audience, and that one definitely does have an audience. I don't know how big it is. I still assume it's big enough to get a second season for that show, because Netflix probably wants to be in business with all of those actors.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, I mean, the cast is just crazy, and it you know, I didn't like the pilot, and I went through the second episode, and I stayed with it for three. I watched three in a row. I stayed with it basically only for the cast, and then I had to stop after the third episode, and I was like, if I go back to this, I got to take a break, because these people are a-holes, and I can't. And I just
there are better moments in later episodes, but there are also worse moments, so it's kind of, it never, like, locks in and becomes something different from what it is.
Yeah.
It continues to be pretty much what it is.
Yeah, okay. The other one is Ozark, which I liked much more. I watched only two episodes of it. Tell everybody about Ozark.
Ozark stars Jason Bateman as a basically money launderer for Mexican drug cartel working out of Chicago, and when his partner is skimming money from the Mexican drug lord, the only thing that keeps Jason Bateman's character alive is the last ditch suggestion that a better place to go to launder money and untapped resource would be Lake of the Ozarks, because apparently people don't go there to launder money. Mm-hmm. And so he goes off to Lake of the Ozarks, and it's sort of sad and desperate, and he tries laundering money, and he tries staying alive, and tries keeping his family together, as it were, and that is Ozark.
Yeah, and I what do you think of it? I like it.
I like the parts of it that I like very much. I think it has tonal problems. I think it, to me, it feels like it's Pulp Fiction that makes the mistake of thinking that it's prestige TV, and it takes itself much, much more seriously than the material, to my mind, demands. I want it to be something more Elmore Leonard-y, more Winter's Bone-y. I want it to be something that's kind of, you know, gritty, dirty genre, and instead it's, you know, Jason Bateman directed the pilot, and there's no color in the entire thing, and basically for the rest of the series, it follows a visual palette where everything is dour and murky and dark, and it to me, it becomes monotonous.
No.
But on the other hand, the things that I like a ton. And Laura Linney gets better and better and better as it goes along. Julia Garner, who some people will know from The Americans, I think she's great. She plays a 19-year-old who is part of a family of basically hillbilly grifters. And she's kind of become the strange matriarch of the family, and she has to reevaluate her idea of what a criminal enterprise is when she comes in contact with Jason Bateman's character. And
right.
I think she's great, and I want to watch a show about her.
Yeah,
I love that.
She's great. I just think the whole cast is really good, and I'm with it so far. I've only watched the two episodes, but I'm with it. All right, we have to cut you loose, Dan. But really quickly, Big Brother last night. Did you watch it?
I did not, because I am stranded at a hotel.
That's right.
Was it good?
It was. You're not going to like the plan that's happening right now.
I can already tell that from Sunday's episode.
You're not going to like what the plan is, and I'm not crazy about it either. It might be the right move for the game. I'm not sure, but the sooner that they get Josh out of that house, the happier I will be, and I know you feel the same way.
He is so awful, but basically we're entering the couple weeks where I'm going to not watch. And then I'm going to need you to tell me on the other side if I need to either catch up or keep going.
Okay, I will do that. And now we're not going to talk for another couple of weeks, Dan. 3 weeks, actually, because I'm on vacation the second week of August.
Nice.
So we will.
Well, you will let me know on the other side if I need to jump back in.
I will certainly do that. I will certainly do that, Dan. And have a great time at the TCA press tour.
Will do. Always a pleasure.
Okay, I'll talk to you in a few weeks. Dan Feinberg, everybody. He's the best. You can read him at The Hollywood Reporter and follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN.